Okay, welcome to Ramsey. And on behalf of the Colloquium Committee, I'm Tom Junk. And one of the reasons why we're here today is because of the scheduling of this result with the publication ended up on a Wednesday. So now it's a colloquium instead of a wine and cheese. And because the quantum people took one west, here we are in Ramsey Auditorium, which is a really nice place. So many thanks, Yonki, for providing this, and it's great. So without further ado, let's introduce our very own Matt Toops, the co-spokesperson of Microbone, along with Justin. Matt? I don't see Matt. Yes, Justin, you please be Matt.
I will be Matt. Matt's up there. Are you coming down, Matt? Can I hold fort for a minute while we bring you down here? Certainly, on behalf of myself and Matt, we're very pleased to see you all here today. Thank you for coming to see the release of this result. Matt, I'll hand over to you.
It's great to be here. should I do another lap? Thank you so much for coming. We are so excited to share with you this result published this morning on Nature. Before we get started, I'd like to invite the lab director, Yonki Kim, to say a few words of welcome. And maybe something about neutrinos and the importance of this result for the lab. Yonki?
Well, I don't want to talk about neutrinos because speakers will talk about neutrinos, but this is super exciting. I'd like to thank Justin and Matt to lead this collaboration and coming to this outstanding results. I have to look at it. I have to listen to our judge whether. But this anomalies, you know, has been going on for what? Many days, yeah, decades. So I'm super excited that we have some conclusive conclusion sounds funny, and this is again very impactful to our science and especially particle physics. So I'm very much look forward to listening, and congratulations to Microbe collaboration. And this is our 10th anniversary. It's a perfect time, so well done.
Thank you very much, Yonki. One quick note, we will have a reception following the colloquium, so we'll have the colloquium, then a Q&A, and then a reception afterwards, so please stick around for that. And so on behalf of Justin and myself, I'd like to invite our first speaker, Hanyu Wei, professor at LSU, up to start our presentation. Thank you.
Right. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Hanyu Wei, an assistant professor at Louisiana State University. This is my colleague, Sergei Malinenko from Behavior National Lab. We'll give today's talk together. Why doesn't it work? Okay. Good. As advertised this morning on social media on various venues, and Microbone has reported a landmark sterile neutrino search and using the first ever two-beam and one detector setup. This result was published in Nature earlier today. And it's a pleasure and honor for Sergei and me to present this result on behalf of the whole Microbone collaboration. Okay, neutrinos. So why study neutrinos? Neutrinos remain some of the most intriguing particles in the universe and constantly challenging what we think we know and pushing physics forward. So they open a unique window for probing some big questions, and such as, is the standard model of elementary particles complete possible extensions? And why is there much more matter than antimatter in the universe? And how does a supernova unleash its energy that sees the next generation star and how does black hole emerge from collapse of massive core? And all beyond that, could there be entire sector of the universe, dark particles, dark forces that we've never seen and shape the cosmic evolution from behind the scenes? And neutrinos sit right in the middle of these mysteries. They interact rarely. Therefore, they are able to carry critical information from extreme environments in nature and provide one of the cleanest pathways to new physics beyond the standard model. So that's why we study them and use them as the most powerful tool for discovering what comes next. In the standard model of elementary particles, neutrinos are fermions, the matter particles, come in three flavors: electron neutrino, muon neutrino, and tau neutrino, and second most abundant in the universe. They have no charge, no mass, and interact. They are only weak forces. And one of the features that makes neutrino especially fascinating is the oscillate, transformed from one flavor to another as they travel. This implies they are not massless and inconsistent with what the standard model tells us. And this is a simple two-flavor neutrino oscillation probability, sinusoidal, as a function of L over E, and L is the neutrino travel distance or detector baseline relative to the neutrino source, and E is the neutrino energy. In the two-flavor picture, let's assume only electron neutrino and muon neutrino. The flavor eigenstates are superpositions of the two mass eigenstates, and the mixing can be described by this 2x2 rotation matrix with one parameter theta, a so-called mixing angle. And each mass eigenstates will pick up different phase value, m squared times L over E, and the phase difference will be proportional to delta m squared times L times over E. That draft oscillation probability shown here. And this factor is the sine squared 2 theta. That is the mixing angle. Back to this plot. Assume only muon neutrino produced at the source. And the blue curve is the new mu disappearance probability. And the red curve is the appearance probability of the other flavor. If a detector sits at the red baseline and red energy, and it can observe either an excess, one flavor showing up unexpectedly, or a deficit of the flavor produced at the neutrino source. Okay, this oscillation pattern can let us extract the mixing angles, and the amplitude gave us the mixing angle, and the frequency let us extract the underlying mass squared difference, which is a delta m squared term here. For example, the super K experiments, the spectrum from atmospheric neutrino oscillation. So the 1 over 2 deficit let us extract the corresponding sine squared 2 theta value. In the NOVA experiments, the spectrum from accelerator neutrinos, and there's a dip here, and the position of the dip corresponds oscillation maximum, help to review the underlying mass squared difference. The Juno result, the first Juno result released 2 weeks ago, there's also a dip, different position, and review a different mass squared difference. Okay, in the full three flavor picture, flavor states and mass eigenstates mixed and can be described by a 3x3 unitary matrix, and we call it PMNS matrix. And each pair of mass eigenstates contribute to a two flavor mixing like parts, something like that. The super K NOVA contribute to this part. And other experiments using vector neutrinos and solar neutrinos and map out the other two parts extremely well. Put them together, three mixing angles, 1-3, 1-2, and 2-3, and two distinct mass squared difference corresponds to these two characteristic Albert E scales of 10 to 3 or 10 to 5, kilometer per GeV or meter per MeV. All right, over the past decades, extensive experimental results align beautifully with the standard three-flavor framework, observing oscillations at the two characteristic Albert E scales we just discussed. However, a few experiments have reported anomalies due to possible oscillations at much, much smaller L over E. This reminds us of solar neutrino anomaly 60 years ago, and where detectors observe a 30% to 50% deficit in solar neutrino flux led to discovery of neutrino oscillations. So what would this anomaly tell us? And let me briefly review them first. LSND and Minibone, new appearance anomalies. Electron neutrino showing up unexpectedly. And in this talk, the new E may refer to both electron neutrino new E or electron anti-neutrino new E bar. But in this slide, I'll distinguish. The LSND experiment was to measure new EBAR from a mu plus decay at rest source. And the muons come from the decays of the secondary mesons and generated by a proton beam striking target. But in this neutrino source, the flux, neutrino flux, is nu E or nu mu bar dominated. Electron neutrino, red, and the muon antineutrino, the cyan part. And this modern energetic corresponds to muon neutrino from pion decay. So as we see here, negligible electron antineutrino component. So however, in the LCD experiment, this measurement, so it observed a significant excess of electron antineutrino. And this excess, where do they come from? So it can be interpreted as a nu mu bar to nu E bar oscillation, where the nu mu bar comes from. And this excess covers the L over E range from 0.4 to 1.4 meter per MeV, much, much smaller than the two characteristic L over E scales we just discussed in three flavor scenario. Okay, mini bone appearance anomaly. So mini bone experiment motivated by the LSND anomaly was to measure electron neutrinos from a different neutrino source, decay implant source. So the neutrinos come from meson decays in flight, rather at rest. So this neutrino have much higher energy, so GeV or sub-GeV scale. So this is the flux of the mini bone experiment, which is also a flux used by macrobone. We'll discuss later. So the y-axis is log scale. So the red curve represents the new E component, which is very, very small, just a sub-percent level. And the mini bone observed a significant excess in this measurement. So the data represented by the dots, error bars, and the stacked histogram represents the prediction of the expected number of events. And this excess covers a LV range and similar to the LSND anomaly, and also can be interpreted as the oscillation from nu mu from the source to nu E. If we put together the nu E bar excess to prediction ratios from different energy beams, from different baselines of these experiments, and expressing them as an appearance probability, we get this plot as a function of L over E. And the black curve represents the underlying appearance, nu mu to nu appearance oscillation probability, right? Something like this. And this angle, mixing angle, sine squared 2 theta mu E, is dedicated to nu mu to nu E appearance channel. All right, so if we map these parameters onto a 2D plane of sine squared theta and delta m squared, that is what it looked like. And we call area, extended areas, allowed regions. And they are extended because they reflect the uncertainties in the measurement. And the allowed regions of LSND and a mini bone cluster together and at EV scale delta m squared. In addition to new E appearance anomalies, and there are new E disappearance anomalies, and from gallium experiments or certain reactor experiments. The gallium experiments, GALX, SAGE, BEST, they use radiochemical detectors based on gallium that can only measure total interaction rate. So they measure electron neutrinos from some radio active sources corresponds to a few discrete sub-MeV energies. And they constantly observe a 20% deficit and of the electron neutrinos produced from radioactive sources. And this deficit can be interpreted as a disappearance effect of the new E produced at the source. And L over E values correspond to a few discrete points ranging roughly from 0.5 to 2.5 meter per MeV. And the neutrino 4 experiment measuring electron antineutrinos from the reactor core observe a oscillation pattern in a similar L over E region. So this is a lot of regions from neutrino 4. Gallium anomaly, the x-axis is sine squared 2 theta EE, so we use theta EE for nu E to nu E disappearance. If we put back the appearance channel, and we notice that they point to a similar delta M square scale, the EV scale. This is 0.1, this is 10. So the oscillation hypothesis and provides a plausible, testable, and very natural explanation for all of them. Okay, back to this slide. So several anomalies, due to possible oscillations at a small L over E, and corresponds to a very high delta M square, inconsistent with these two known mass splittings, and imply the existence of an extra heavier flavor and mass eigenstates, and commonly called a stereo neutrino, which has no standard model interactions. And in this talk, we'll focus on such EV-scale light stereo neutrinos producing small L over E oscillation. And in the 3+1 framework, this is additional flavor, new S stereo neutrino, and this is additional mass eigenstates M4. And the delta M square we discussed in previous slides is actually delta M square 4-1, and ignoring the difference among M1, 2, 3, and they are very, very small compared to M4. And if such a stereo neutrino can be found, it will be a beyond standard model particle and reshape our understanding of mass generation, lepton number variation, such kind of things, and profoundly impact particle physics, extraparticle physics, as well as cosmology. Okay, macrobome, focus of today's talk, has already contributed to the stereo neutrino interpretation of these anomalies by searching for stereo neutrino-induced oscillations. This is our 2023 result, an old result, and we set a constraint in this 2D parameter space. And this constraint corresponds to a exclusion curve, and meaning the oscillation parameters to the right side of this curve and corresponds to stronger oscillation signal would have stood out clearly in our data. But because we saw no oscillation in our data, this region was excluded, this exclusion curve. And in addition to this Macrobome old result, earlier experiments, mostly accelerator experiments at the short baselines, or low L over E, and set their respective constraints in this 2D plot, and because they saw non-oscillation in their data. And as we see, this is the accumulative exclusion curve represented by solid black line. As we see, the 3+1 stereo neutrino model is doing an open possibility. And there is another channel. New macrobome result. So it'll be very exciting to see a new macrobome result and see how much it can contribute to clarifying this picture. There's another channel, new E to new E disappearance channel, if you remember. And the constraints from the earlier reactor neutrino experiments, the prospect, stereo, and have ruled out most regions allowed by the neutrino 4 and the gallium. And with the most recent result from Katrin, and Katrin released its latest stereo neutrino search result earlier today in the same issue of Nature, together with the new macrobome result, but use a different method. It's not oscillation-based method. It's based on the beta decay spectrum kink. All right, but Katrin is more sensitive to high delta M square region above the scale in this plot. But with this, the new Katrin result, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the entire regions are excluded. So this channel is very interesting, in a very interesting situation. But it will be also interesting to see whether new macrobome result can see something on it using a very different neutrino source. Okay, where is macrobome and what is macrobome? So macrobome sits on the booster neutrino beam line of Fermilab, the booster neutrino beam, and uses AGV proton beam bombarding target somewhere here, producing neutrinos and passing through our detector. And the macrobome detector is 70 meter upstream of the minibome detector here along the same beam line. So it can provide a direct test of the minibome anomaly. But macrobome uses a very different detector technology, liquid argon TPC, a combination of liquid argon calorimeter, high resolution facing temperature action chamber. So liquid argon TPC enables a powerful neutrino flavor reconstruction and selection. And macrobome's L over E ranges from 0.2 to 2, so it can probe the EV scale stereo neutrino oscillations, you know, for all the anomalies we just discussed. Okay, the strategy of the last stereo neutrino search at macrobome. 3+1, so one additional stereo flavor, and full 3+1 analysis, meaning all detectable oscillation effects are considered in our data, including new mu new E appearance, new E new E disappearance. This is what we just discussed, and also new mu to new mu disappearance, and a UE to new mu oscillation, UE new mu to new tau, or new stereo. But these two channels are negligible in our data, and it corresponds to a very small number of electron neutrino events or neutral current events. So the three main oscillation effects and are considered here. We perform a simultaneous feed on all available new E and new mu interaction channel in our data. And this way, we can also reduce the shared systematic uncertainties and improving the sensitivity. So this is actually a multi-parameter problem, but we can project our result onto different 2D planes and directly compare it to the available lot of regions reported by these other experiments. So in addition to the new mu to new E channel, as we just mentioned, we also set constraints in the new E to new E channel, though this sensitivity is not very competitive. Okay, so the sensitivity of the old result, 2023, is much worse than expected, and mainly due to a degeneracy in oscillation parameters. And this is a challenge that we need to deal with and what it is. The basic idea is the appearance and the disappearance effect in new spectrum can cancel each other. So the oscillated spectrum is indistinguishable from non-oscillated spectrum. For example, this is non-oscillated spectrum, new E. And this is the energy spectrum. If you only consider a disappearance effect, a small fraction of new E also, is missing, so times PEE. Like new E probability. If we only consider appearance effect, a small fraction of muon neutrino oscillating to new E and added on top of the new events. So if the appearance effect happened to offset the disappearance effect, that is what we have. The net oscillated spectrum is the same as the oscillated. That is the region of the degeneracy. But we have new mu spectrum, if you remember. We feed to all new E and new mu. But here, the new mu spectrum provides little help with this situation. The reason is, even if the appearance effect is as large as the total new E events from the beam, this P mu E, new mu, new E oscillation probability is still a very, very small number, as there is only a tiny new E component in the saturated neutrino beam used with macro boom. And also, in general, a saturated neutrino beam, new E component is very small. So that will result in a basically invisible disappearance effect in the new mu spectrum. All right, so degeneracy arises. These two effects cancel each other, meaning the ratio of these two mixing angles equal to the beam new E to new mu ratio, which is almost a fixed value for different energies in the beam, meaning there's also no, you know, shape information that we can use to disentangle the appearance. All right, fortunately, macrobomb has two beams. So this is where the macrobomb's unique capability comes in. So in addition to the booster neutrino beam on axis, and we see neutrinos from a different beam, the neutrino that main ejector, 8 degree off axis macrobomb, use a very different proton beam in striking the target. These two beams have very different new E component. So this is the flux from the BMB. Only about 0.5% new E, BMB, beam, and for new mu, about 4%. So if we calculate the beam new mu to new E ratio, BMB 200, new mu 25. So one order of magnitude smaller. So meaning they have quite different degeneracy points if we use single BMB or single new mu beam to do the oscillation search. So we have two handles to lift the appearance and the disappearance degeneracy. Oh, what happens if we combining these two beams? We made this plot to demonstrate this. So this is a coordinate frame. X and Y axis are the ratios of oscillated and to non-oscillated new E events in BMB and new E. So these two dashed lines mark the degeneracy point. This is for BMB, this is for new E, correspond to different ratios. This is the new E to new E ratio. From the beam. So where do those mixing angles sit in this plot? Here we go. So we add some curves, and each curve represents a constant value of the oscillation parameter. For example, the red one corresponds to sine squared 2 theta EE dedicated to new E disappearance effect. And this greenish curve represents a constant value for another angle, sin squared to theta mu e, nu mu to nu e appearance effect. And the nu mu to nu mu desaturation effect, effect makes the angle can be determined if we know these two values, and they are correlated. Okay, so if you take a look at this intersection where we have sin squared 2 theta e 0.1, sin squared 2 theta mu e 0.002, that is what we have. This set of parameters will produce a stronger appearance effect in nu e spectrum, resulting in net excess in BMB, nu e spectrum. The same set of parameters will produce a stronger disappearance effect, resulting in a net deficit in the nu mi, nu e spectrum. But we don't need to do this calculation. We can directly read this information out from the coordinate frames. So here, the BMB sits at 1.1, meaning 10% excess, and BMB 0.96 is a 4% deficit. So if we place the full 2D grid encoding the values of the mixing angles, and X and Y axis tell us the nu mi and BMB excess or deficit with the corresponding oscillation effects, and we can relatively straightforward to sense how the degeneracy is broken. For example, we can scan along this line, corresponds to BMB degeneracy point, because the ratio is always 1 for these oscillation parameter values. The BMB no change, and the nu mi deficit, if you take a look at the y-axis value, rapidly grows with an increasing sin squared 2 theta e, meaning we can disentangle the disappearance effect from the appearance effect. And also, based on this plot, we can sense BMB is more sensitive to appearance effect because the gradient of these curves is roughly along x-axis. And the gradient of the sin squared 2 theta EE disappearance effect is roughly along y-axis. So nu mi is more sensitive to disappearance effect. Sergey will discuss further about that. Okay, we can use more accurate predicted nu e spectrum to cross-check this understanding. So nu e spectrum, BMB, nu e spectrum, nu mi, this is where we start. So no oscillation effect. So we scan different sin squared 2 theta EE, sin squared 2 theta mu e change accordingly. And that is what we have. So BMB nu e spectrum barely shift, but nu mi develops a pronounced deficit with an increasing sin squared 2 theta. Meaning we could use nu mi to constrain disappearance effect. Subtracting disappearance effect in BMB, then we can probe appearance effect. So that is what we do. All right, so the new result, released in the, today's Nature, used the first 3 years of BMB and NUMI data, and combining these two beams together, unlocks the full power to test the 3+1 model and compare to a lot of regions by the reported anomalies. So the dotted blue curve represent the new sensitivity, today's new result. And we achieved 0.1% sensitivity in this new appearance channel, capable of testing these anomalies. And in the new E to new E disappearance channel, we also achieve a competitive sensitivity compared to Catrain and Prospect. And, but we use a very different neutrino source, so much higher energy, GeV sub GeV compared to MeV or sub MeV usually used in this. All right, I'll stop here and hand it over to Sergey, who will walk you through the analysis and the results.
Fantastic. Right, thanks, Hanyu. Right, let's talk about MicroBoom 3+1 result. But before talking about result, we need to discuss several pieces that actually, in combination, gives us a better understanding of the result we have. So we need to discuss our data, our event selection, systematics, and statistical analysis, starting with our data. As Hanyu already mentioned, we do have two beams, and across two beams, we use a half of available MicroBoom data for this analysis. With BMB beam, we reached about 6.4 10 to 20 POTs, and for NUMI, we reached about 1 10 to 21 POTs. The most important part about these two beams for our result is that BMB, it's almost pure NUMUs, and it's very sensitive to NUE appearance. And NUMI has a much larger NUE content and more sensitive to NUE disappearance. Right. That's our data for event selection. Our event selection starts with our detector. And for detector, we use a low energy threshold fully active liquid argon calorimeter
and the high energy and position resolution time projection chamber. This detector is excellent at identifying different species of particles and reconstructing 3D images with fine-grained precision. Here on the right, you can see the event display from our detector. You can see a vertex of neutrino vertex very well. You can see a couple protons coming out, shower from pionic decay, maybe delta ray and pion here. But one of the important qualities of the detector is our electron-photon separation power, which we do in two steps. First is dQdx, which is ionization energy loss, is two times different between one electron and a photon. And also, we are looking for a gap between the vertex, neutrino vertex, and the start of the shower. This enables our high-performance new E selection out of overwhelming new mu charge and neutral current events. All right, the reconstruction in our detector is performed using wire cell package in four stages. It starts with noise filtering and signal processing. Then it comes to 3D imaging, clustering, and charge light matching. Then we do 3D trajectory and dQdx fitting and cosmic muon tagging. And lastly, we do multi-track fitting, 3D vertexing, and particle identification. For neutrino energy, we use calorimetric reconstruction, which means we sum the reconstructed kinetic energies of all the particles in the event. We add rest mass values for muons, electrons, and pions. And we also add average binding energies per nucleon for each proton we see in the event. With this, we achieve a good resolution of about 15% and bias of about 10% for our neutrino energy reconstruction for our new E's and new mu's. And this performance is similar for both BNB and new mu beams. Right. With this selection, we can take a look at our target channels, which are obviously new E's. And they are not, you can don't see the data points just yet. We will put them on later. But what you can see here is the green colors, which is our new E and anti-new E CC selection for BNB on the left and new mu on the right. You can also see these blue patches here. It's our new mu and anti-new mu CC selection. And the other shades of green, it's our CC pi node and NC pi node selection. So the main takeaway here is that we have very pure selection of new E's, and the main backgrounds are new mu's and pi nodes. But it's not just these channels that we use. We have a lot more. So let's walk through all of them. First of all, we split our new ECC channel into fully contained and partially contained. The reason is based on reconstructed particles of fully in fiducial volume or not, and that gives us increased statistics channel. We also do have sidebands. That's our new mu's, also split in fully and partially contained. And our new mu channels are meant to constrain our new prediction due to universality of cross-section modeling for CC interaction and common hadronic parentages. And also we have three pi node channels, CC pi node fully contained, partially contained, and NC pi node. And pi nodes are a major background for our new research because it mimics new signature. All of these channels, which you can see seven of them here, but in total there are 14 because there are two beams, are fit simultaneously in our analysis. Right. Let's go through the sideband channels one by one, starting from our new mu's. So here on the left, I always show BNB. On the right is new mu version of our new mu selection with good high squares for both of them. But also you can see that both of them have MC under prediction, which is still consistent at one sigma level. I'll get back to the new me part of this slide later in the talk. But for now, let's move to our CC pi zero selection, again with BNB and new me having a good data Monte Carlo agreement. And last but not least, our sideband and MC pi nodes, and again, BNB on the left and new me on the right have a good data Monte Carlo agreement. All right, that concludes our event selection. So let's talk about our systematics. We have three main sources of systematics. It's detector systematics, cross-section, and flux. Let's start with detector, right? So we have a range of tools that we use to characterize our detector. It's a cosmic muons, protons, laser. Like example, you can see here on the right, we can plot the reconstructed entry and exit position of cosmic muons. But then we evaluate a range of systematic effects, like covering light yield, space charge, recombination, wire waveform simulation. Like on the right, again, you can see the effect of space charge. So in perfect world, the positions should lie nicely on the angle here, but they are not because of space charge. So we compare our data to Monte Carlo to assess the magnitude from each of the effects, and we use modified Monte Carlo samples to assess the impact of these uncertainties on the analysis. All right. The second one is a cross-section. But before the uncertainty, a couple words about our cross-section model. So for cross-section model, we have a base cross-section model, which is GNV3, and it's shown as a blue line here on the plot. But when we do tune it to T2K, nu mu cc 0 pi cross-section, which are data points here on the right, and that's how we obtain our base microboon tune model, which is the red line here. Then we can use this model and vary a set of cross-section parameters around it, black line here, and the various set of parameters, which like total of 57 of them, we obtain this one sigma band. And we can propagate the same parameter variation to the event rates to build the covariance matrices. And here, the example of like actually correlation matrix, because it's easier to read. How you can read this, B and B correlations are bottom left and nu mi on top right, and they split in nu e's and nu mu's. And the one, which is yellow, is basically the highest correlation, right? So you can see immediately that nu e's and nu mu's are highly correlated for both beams. That's, as I mentioned, because of universality of cross-section modeling for CC interactions. We can leverage these correlations to constrain the cross-section model and its uncertainties. So as an example, let's take a look at our uncertainty band for BNB nu e selection. And here only cross-section systematics. And we can constrain our BNB nu e's if our BNB nu mu's. Okay? And you can immediately see that due to high correlation, the uncertainties significantly shrunk. All right. The last but not least, systematics is a flux. And before talking about flux systematic itself, a couple words about our flux model that we updated prior to this analysis. Why we started looking at updating it. So at 8 degrees of axis, for nu mi, flux is quite different from the traditional on axis. Here on the left, you can see BNB flux for nu mu's, and on the right is nu mi flux for nu mu. For BNB, most of nu mu's comes from pi notches. But for nu mi, there is a higher fraction of kaons plays a role. So model must account for kaon production very carefully. But then we started looking at available models. We understood that they disagree significantly. For example, here there are some available models which are adjunct for 10, 11, and for 10, for 11, and for 9, shown in different colors. There is not much data that exists to constrain the K-plus production in nu mi beam. So what we did, we use the base model that agrees best with available data for us, which is JANT 410. And we applied the very conservative uncertainty up to 40% where there is no coverage based on the model spread. All right. This slide basically shows the summary of what went into our updated flux. We did update some inline geometry. We updated our baseline model. We introduced constraints from NA49 and others similar to Nova and Minerva, and we did very conservative treatment of uncertainties outside the data coverage. On the right, you can see the ratio of all to new flux for nu mu's on the left and nu e's on the right. flux. We can, again, take a look at our correlation metrics for two beams, for nu is and nu mu's. And the same thing here, BNB is at bottom left, and nu mu is at top right. You immediately can see that between two beams, the correlation is part here is basically zero because we treat them as uncorrelated because they have a different hadronic processes and beam energies. And also for nu mu beam, correlations are much stronger because they have a higher fraction of K pluses, as we discussed, and it's also a dominant decay for nu is. So that's why the correlations are very high. And also for off-axis beam, there is a high number of reinteractions, which also contributes to this high. So as I promised, we are kind of getting back to our nu mu sidebands, and there is a way how we can validate our nu mu flux modeling using our BNB data. So as we discussed, BNB and nu mu correlated in detector and cross-section systematics, but the flux systematics is uncorrelated. So what we can do, we can constrain our nu mu nu mu selection with BNB nu mu, right? What it's going to give us, the detector and cross-section systematics would largely cancel out, leaving us mostly with flux. And also, the nu mu prediction will be updated based on BNB data. So let's take a look at this constrained nu mu nu mu spectrum, which is here in blue. So you immediately can see that there is a good data Monte Carlo agreement. The updated prediction agrees well with data, and uncertainty here is dominated by the flux. So with that procedure, we consider our nu mu flux model validated. All right. So we kind of discussed these three pieces. All of them come into our statistical analysis. And to understand the result, we need to remind ourselves of this equation, which is the probability of oscillation at short baseline for different neutrino flavors. But most important part for us here, it's the sine squared 2 theta alpha beta, which obviously can be different based on what you are trying to calculate. For new appearance, it's sine squared 2 theta mu e. For new disappearance, it's sine squared 2 theta e. And for new mu disappearance, it's sine squared 2 theta mu mu. In our analysis, we explore actually right part of these equations. So we explore 3D parameter space in delta m squared for 1, sine squared theta 1, 4, and sine squared theta 2, 4. But all the results are given in 2D, in delta m squared for 1, sine squared 2 theta mu e, or EE, right? So to do so, we do profiling over sine squared theta 2, 4, which basically minimizing high square over the one axis and calculating then the result in two dimensions. Right. This is the full high square that we use. We discussed our measurements, we discussed our prediction, and the covariance matrix that come into it. It's also worth reminding that this high square that we use, it includes all 14 channels simultaneously. And how can we use it? Here is the pipeline that we follow in our analysis. First, we can get best fit value for oscillation parameters in four new hypotheses. Then, with best fit, we can do a data consistency test against three new hypotheses using Feldman-Cousins procedure. And after, we can set limits via frequency CLS method if the data consistency passed. Okay. So now, all these pieces come together into our results. And we can start with putting data points on our target channels, starting from the BNB. So I'll show new ECC channel here on the left, and its nu mu counterpart for this beam on the right. This one is not new. We published it in 2023, but still it's worth reminding us that we do have a small deficit here in BNB nu ECC channel, and we do have excess in nu mu ECC. But the interesting thing that happens in our 14-channel simultaneous fit is that our nu mu's will be constraining our nu E channel, updating the prediction and potentially pulling it up based on nu mu data. Okay, this one is new. So that's our new me collection. On the left, again, it's new ECC channel. On the right, it's our new muse. And both of them has a small data Monte Carlo offset. But as in the same sense as BNB, in our simultaneous fit, new muse will constrain our new ease, updating prediction and reducing the normalization offset, as you see here. Let's actually illustrate how this constraining procedure works. Let's isolate these two channels, BNB new ease and new mean new ease here. And without constraint, high square is about 37.9 for 50 degrees of freedom. But then we can constrain it with all non-new channels that we got. And we have this blue line here. And with constraint, high square increase a little bit to 41, which makes sense because the uncertainty shrunk. But this pull of the prediction up is coming from new muse, as we discussed, because most constraining power comes from new muse. And that's how our constraining procedure works in our new channel. The other interesting thing to look at here is how our fractional uncertainties change in our new ECC selection. Because after all, we are statistics limited analysis with dominant systematics being flux and cross section. And what we really need is to reduce our uncertainties for better results. So here is fractional uncertainty without constraint for BNB and new mean new ease. Then we shrink the systematic uncertainties and we get this black line, which is already significantly reduced fractional uncertainty. But also, as you remember, the prediction for both BNB and new mean is pulled up, which is further reduced the systematic uncertainty and higher for new mean because the pull up is higher for new mean. Okay. So with this data, we finally can go and follow our statistical analysis pipeline throughout. So starting with the best fit values. Here it is. So our best fit values here on the left. And we compare this best fit line, which is for new best fit, red line here, with non-oscillation prediction, which is in fact histogram for BNB on the left and NUMI on the right. Basically, you can see almost no difference between them. The reason is because we got this very low delta M square for one, which leads to negligible oscillation effect. If is best fit, we can get a test against three new hypotheses. To do so, we use Feldman-Cousins procedure. So we throw about 10,000 toys, and we get this nice distribution of delta high square. And we can put our data, delta high square, which is around 0.2, very close to zero here. And that gives us p-value of about 0.96. What this p-value means? It means that BNB and NUMI data is consistent with three new hypotheses. Right. Now we can go ahead and set the limits since we know that the data is consistent, three new. And we can start discussing our limits with our experience channel. So first, there is our sensitivity. So we compare our sensitivity, which is this blue line here, with our previous BNB-only result, which is our red line here. So sensitivity obviously improves with respect to BNB-only case because of the degeneracy of, we mitigated the degeneracy of oscillation parameters and also new mean, new E contribution in this channel. But now, where actually our data stands? So let's take a look at our data exclusion. So that's our data exclusion, this is solid red line here. And you can see that Microboon at 95% confidence level in this channel excludes most of gallium allowed region and parts of neutrino 4 allowed region. We also can put our data result in the respect of our Brazil band around our median sensitivity. So here, blue line is median sensitivity. Green band is 1 sigma, and orange band is 2 sigma bands around it. So you can see that data exclusion is mostly weaker than the sensitivity and lays primarily inside the 1 sigma band. Why is that? So we need to remember that disappearance channel is more influenced by the new me because it has 4 times more new E's than BNB. And new me, after constraint, data matches prediction very well. But still, BNB data has this deficit that weakens the new E disappearance limit. Okay. Now we can go through same logic with our appearance channel. First, comparing our sensitivity with our previous result. And again, our sensitivity improves with respect to BNB-only case because of degeneracy mitigation. But now we can finally take a look at our exclusion limit at appearance channel. And that's how it looks, this solid line with huge jump in high delta M square. And we include at 95% confidence level, LSMD 99% allowed region, and also we exclude vast majority of minibull 95% allowed region. Right. Same logic with disappearance. We can put it in context of our Brazil band around median sensitivity. You can see, again, that our exclusion limit is stronger than median sensitivity, and it lies in the border of two sigma region. Why this is happening? Let's take a look. Again, we get back to this constrained new E predictions for BNB and new me. And what we need to know about this appearance channel is that it's dominated by the BNB beam because it has 4 times less new E's and 2 times more new me's than new me. And this BNB, it has a data deficit that boosts new appearance limit, which basically favors smaller appearance angles. But also there is another way to look at this result, right? For this, we need to step back and remember our BNB-only result. So here it is. These red lines show BNB-only full 3+1 result that considers appearance, new appearance, new disappearance, and new disappearance all together, with solid line being data result and dashed line being sensitivity. And obviously, the result is the data result is slightly stronger than sensitivity because of the BNB deficit. But what we also published back in 2023 is appearance-only result, which is unphysical in our case because it disregards any effects from new disappearance and new disappearance, and this black solid line here. And it's obviously stronger than our full result because it doesn't have any degeneracy coming from these channels. But it also what it also shows us, it shows us basically the limit that can be reached with BNB-only data if there would be no degeneracy of oscillation parameters coming from other oscillation channels. So let's overlay this appearance-only result with our new two-beam full result. So you can see that they are almost similar, except this small part around the 2 EV square. And the reason for this is that basically new me provides the maximum degeneracy mitigation to BNB dominant appearance channel. And that's why we reach this limit. All right. So just to summarize what I've discussed right now. So we saw no evidence for 3+1 sterile neutrino model. We exclude at 95% confidence level the 3+1 explanation for LSMD and minibull anomalies and exclude most regions allowed by the gallium and neutrino 4. So, and with that, we close the window for 3+1 model as an explanation for long-standing LSMD and minibull anomalies. And here, I'll get the torch back to Hanyu to put these results into a broader perspective. Here you go.
Okay, thank you, Turkey, presentation. Good to see you again. So now I'm going to wrap up today's talk and with an outlook where this takes us next. So as Sergey just summarized, the 3+1 framework no longer provides a variable explanation for the LSMD and the minibull anomalies, but those anomalies, the observed excess data, haven't gone away.
So do the Raptor and the Gallium anomalies, and they also remain unexplained. And these anomalies continue to drive a global program of current next-generation experiments aimed at resolving the remaining possibilities. I just list some of them, not exhaustive, and many of these experiments can provide a direct test of these anomalies as they employ similar neutrino sources, or detector configurations, or in a similar LRE range, and many of them incorporate more advanced detection techniques or detector technology, so more sensitive investigation of these anomalies. And among these experimental efforts, a central program is the Drop Baseline Neutrino Program at Fermilab, so which is an extension of Microbone with two additional liquid argon TPC detectors at different baselines, so the near detector SBND and far detector ICROS. So the near far detector configuration can substantially reduce systematic uncertainty in flux, cross section, and detector, and improve sensitivity. And also the SBND detector in close proximity to the beam target and ICROS, very massive, and both fully operational and have already collected the largest statistics of data in the relevant L over E region. So this enabled SBM program to provide a high statistics, low systematic exploration of the last star neutrino oscillation. And not only new E appearance or new E disappearance, as we just discussed, but also the new mu disappearance channel, and to which the macrobone alone has very limited assistance. All right. In addition to star neutrino oscillation search, the SBM program can provide a more comprehensive and sensitive separation of a broader landscape of beyond the standard model physics as well, some of which will be highlighted in the following slides and with relevance to the LSND and the minimum one. All right, for example, expanded stereo neutrino models. This includes possibilities like 3 plus 1 and plus additional stereo flavors, plus 2, for example, or 3 plus 1 and augmented by new dynamics involving the stereo state. For example, non-standard interactions, decaying stereo neutrinos, and some other examples. So Microbone has begun exploring the 3 plus 2 framework and is actively investigating the 3 plus 1 plus decay scenario. In addition to stereo neutrino oscillation searches, non-oscillation searches targeting photon final states are making significant progress towards alternative explanations for LSND and minimum anomalies. So because the electromagnetic signature in the excess events may arise from photon final states, which convert into a pair of electron, positron, rather a single electron from oscillated neutron. And the excess photon final states may come from unexpected or underestimated standard model processes. For example, the delta relative decay, single photon, coherent single photon production from current interactions, and Microbone recent analysis saw no sign of excess in these two standard model processes, but we do see an interesting 2-sigma excess in a model agnostic inclusive single photon search, particularly in this zero proton channel. As shown here, these two beams, 100 to 300 MeV, and this is a 2-sigma. So this motivates further investigations in Microbone and SBM. All right, another active frontier is a broader landscape of dark sector models. And for example, the neutrino-induced upscattering, dark matter particle-induced upscattering, or heavy neutral decay and generated from the beam target. And many of these models predict photon final state or direct E plus, E minus final state. So signatures that Microbone or SBN can identify with high precision, as we just discussed in the photon studies. This is the event play of a E plus, E minus signal and from a dark sector model simulation in Microbone liquid argon TPC detector. And recently, Microbone released the world's first direct search for a dark sector E plus, E minus signal at the possible explanation to the medium anomaly. This is the result. This is data with error bars. We saw no sign of excess of such signals compared to a green dashed histogram that representing typical E plus E minus signal from a dark sector model. All right, but alternative dark sector models, particularly those with very different characteristic angular distributions of E plus E minus pair or energy distributions, and they remain compelling targets for further investigation of macrobone and SBN program. All right, I'll finish up here and back to the main results discussed today. So using the first two-beam, one-detector search of its kind, macrobone sees no sign of sterile neutrino-induced oscillations in the relevant L over E regime and closing the 3 plus 1 window associated with the anomalies. With this chapter settled, path is now open for new ideas and discoveries in future theoretical and experimental efforts. More to come. Stay tuned. Thank you for listening.
Great. Thank you, Hanyu. Thank you, Sergey. Even though I've known about those results for quite a long time, though, it's still really nice to see them up there on the screen at last. So, and it's really nice now to actually get the opportunity to start hearing some feedback from all of you outside of a collaboration on these results and to get your questions. So I think we now have about 10 minutes to take questions, so please. See one up there. Three up this side. Go for it, Tom. Yes.
Me first. Okay. First of all, huge congratulations and thanks for beautiful results and also beautiful talks. I really like the results and your talks. I have a question. So you said that you have very negligible detector systematics, regardless of you have NUMMI beam or not, right? Did you say that you have small detector systematics? Negligible systematics for detector.
Not negligible, but not dominant.
Yeah, not the dominant. Yeah, yes. Compared to the other two. So that's true for even though you don't use any NUMMI beam. So detector systematics is still small, no matter what you use NUMMI beam or not.
Yes.
Okay. So how did you achieve such a good detector systematics?
A good detector.
Right, I think that's good detector design, the whole collaboration, tremendous effort, calibrating detector, better understand detector response, also produce some diversion samples, something like that, help us to estimate detector system and uncertainty in the high precision.
Okay, yeah. So that's one thing we need to learn from you. And another one quick question is that, so the last slide of your Hanyu's talk. So you compare the sensitivity with 2023 and the current sensitivity. So I see that the bigger sine square theta values. So your sensitivity degraded with NUMMI beam. So why is that? So
you mean at
size
the bottom
square
here?
Two theta.
You mean bottom or
Yeah, bottom.
Here?
Yeah, those higher size scale 2 theta UE. So you see the current sensitivity is degraded compared to the 2023.
Oh, because it's not exactly apple-to-apple comparison, right? Because here we compare data results with the sensitivity result. So
2023 is the data
yes,
result.
Yeah. So it would be more fair to compare
I
sensitivity
see.
To sensitivity.
I thought those
then
two are
they would be converging at this point, and that's
yeah. It would be good to see some apple-to-apple
yeah,
as
but,
well.
But this is data, so it's kind of a little bit to the left.
Okay, thank you.
In the future on the SBM program where you have two detectors on the BMB beam, how useful will the NUMMI beam be? Or will you need it at all?
Right. To me, I think at NUMMI beam will further boost the sensitivity in SBM program. So ICROS can see the neutrinos from NUMMI for sure. And also, though we have near far detector, but there's still sort of degeneracy. UMI can help. But this degeneracy can be weaker as we have near far detector and different bases. But still, the UMI can help.
There's another one up there, Tom.
All right. Thanks for the talk. This is great. It's great to use NumiBeam to do the searches. I had two quick but highly correlated questions. One is, what is the NumuBar contamination in NumiOfAxis?
Do you have this?
This is negligible. Let me find the flux somewhere.
I'm not sure we have a breakdown for NumiO anti-NumiO, but it's a small fraction.
Yeah, person level.
Oh, percent level?
Yeah.
Okay.
And in our selections, it's also very.
Yeah, it's bigger than NumiE, but much, much smaller than NumiO.
Wait, but NumiE contamination is 5%. So then NumiO can't be percent level. It needs to be like, what, 20%? I think my question is if anti-NumuS are relevant for this, and if they are, how do you correlate the cross-sections? Because the anti-NumuS cross-section will have a very different Q-square dependence, and it will lead to very different topologies in your detector, right? So your NumuS sample may have a much larger contamination from NumuBar, which will change the efficiencies I would expect due to topology.
Do you have the NumuS spectrum somewhere?
I don't have a breakdown for NumuO anti-NumuO here.
But our cross-section model, treat NumuO and the NumuO bar differently. And that information will go into prediction, for example, in this predictive spectrum, as well as in the systematic uncertainty estimation.
Yeah, the key thing is that that will be in the covariance matrix. It
right.
will be accounted for.
We just did not distinguish NumuO, NumuO bar here in this plot.
Yeah,
right.
But in general, we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Tom, there's a couple of questions down here. I can't see them at the top, but there's one there, and then Young Key has one over here. Yes, and then we'll. Okay.
Ask your question. Can I ask something? It's not directly related to microphone.
go ahead.
Or Katrine.
Yeah.
How? What's going on? Do they have any results with the mass, neutrino mass?
Neutrino mass?
Yeah, that was the main goal for them.
That was the main goal. Yeah, they did release something at neutrino, didn't they? Now, what is the new Katrine result?
So you mentioned about their.
The paper that came out today was a stellar neutrino search.
I understand,
but I
was curious what's going on with their main goal.
Main goal is doing that.
Point four five.
EV. That is the current limit.
0.45 EV. Yeah.
My voice may or may not support this question. I was watching as it went by. You showed us more than a dozen fit results with chi-squared over a number of degrees of freedom. They were all less than one. Statistics doesn't do that. So somehow the errors are too big.
Exactly where to go. The errors are big. The errors are conservative. But what we are doing in the end, I'll show you constraint plot.
Yeah, constraint plot.
Far back. Here we go. This one.
So,
because after constraint, the uncertainty shrunk. So. Yeah, we do have a conservative uncertainty that in simultaneous 14-channel fit would be shrinking due to the correlations that from our high statistic sidebands.
in many of these plots, all of these plots are correlated with each other. They're all showing much the same distribution in different ways. So I think in a feature of a, you know, a somewhat systematically limited analysis, once one of your plots has a chi-square a degree of freedom below one, given that a lot of these thematic error bars are highly correlated across their lengths, any distribution you make on that data is going to be sort of similarly correlated in a way.
Even the top left plot's a little, 9 out of 25, even by itself, all one is a little unlikely, but
yeah,
I'll give you one.
Oh, yes, no, it's a systematically dominated analysis with a, you know, highly correlated bin-to-bin systematics.
Thank you very much for the nice talk. Could you go back to the slide with the neutral energy estimate? I have two questions. So first of all, so what is the source of the binding energy value? The 8-point-something MeV, I think. And the second thing, if you could produce better energy estimate for neutrinos by including neutrons, something like that, could you also get further improvement in the sensitivity?
For your second question, the answer is yes. And I think there is some works on deep learning energy estimation that for microboon that actually might go later in the analysis and potentially boost the sensitivity. And for the second question, I missed it.
The binding energy.
Second question. First question. Binding energy.
What's the source of the binding energy?
Yeah. Source of the binding. From a paper. From measurement. A test. From, yeah.
Okay. I see.
Yeah.
Because values are keep changing, so I was curious about.
Right.
Thank you very much.
But that one also did some study. We can vary that a little bit, so the impact is not very.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
Any more questions? Thanks, Pedro.
Okay. Sorry for like dominating a bit. Just one more question, I promise. Do you have sensitivity to NUMU disappearance? Because if you can do the appearance at 10 to the minus 3 and the NUI disappearance at the 10%, it feels like you should be able to get NUMU disappearance at the percent level, right? So did you check?
Yes, check that. It's not that sensitive, but we can provide some result constraints, but didn't publish that result in this
paper. But is that like at the 10% level or the 1% level?
10% level.
So, okay.
Yeah. So that is basically the uncertainty in the new mu spectrum. But in the new E, that is something different because that sensitivity is basically shrinked because the new mu to new E ratio is very, very high. We measure the new E, but come from new mu.
Okay.
Right. But new mu disappearance is still a new mu channel. So that is. That sensitivity will correspond to the uncertainty.
Okay.
New mu disappearance is very hard with a single detector. A dead record
right.
of your spectrum. You don't have this new mu to new e constraint. You can't use that in the same way to think your uncertainty. So you know, that is somewhere where we really need a multi-detector SBN program to do a good job there. Right. I don't think I saw any hands, but if there is one. One more.
So if I'm following what you said earlier, then you have your systematics are correlated bin to bin, and you've not taken out a separate global systematic. If that's the case, then in fact, if you had accounted for that as a global, you would have had a much worse chi-squares. That, in turn, would have decreased your sensitivity in each of your points. And basically, it sounds to me, now I, you know, that, in fact, what you've done is you have overcoverage, and your limits actually should be weaker. I'll leave that to you to think about.
Yeah, I mean, it's not clear why that would make the limits weaker at all, certainly to me. The frequentist CLS method that we do at the end, you know, takes into account all of the possible uncertainties in the covariance matrix as we do the fake data experiments, and that's how we calculate the exclusion region.
There's a strong normalization system and uncertainty, something like that. But if you remember the preceding band of the sensitivities, and we add the 1 sigma, 2 sigma band around the median sensitivity, we do see, you know, our data exclusion result is consistent with meaning reasonable result for uncertainty.
The uncertainties are correlated. You did it the same way. That's fine, but I'm questioning whether the methodology is right. If you have a global correlated systematic, which needs to be accounted for only once.
But the constraint basically reduced the system.
Doesn't matter. There's still a global effect.
Yeah.
Right? If there's a global effect that's going to shift the whole thing up and down, then that should be counted once and not as part of a broader bin-to-bin.
So you can account for a global normalization shift in a covariance matrix. It just looks like a flat covariance matrix. But you can encode that type of uncertainty in a covariance matrix. And so the normalization uncertainties that are a part of this analysis are encoded in that covariance matrix. You get the same result as if you took it out. So it's included.
I think one more question down here, and then I think we have to wrap up. So we've got time for one more question, and then we actually have to leave and get to the reception. So, it'd be one more. So if you want one more question, let me go for it.
Okay. So I just want to make sure that I understood you correctly. So the reason why you have much better, you know, sensitivity with the NumiBeam is not actually because of NumiBeam. That's because of you constrained with, you know, even BNB beam, you constrained with the other, you know, channel, I mean, you know, disappearance channel to appearance channel, right? That gives a huge reduction. So this plot is a little bit, so 2023 versus 25 result comparison could be a little bit misleading because the main reason could be due to NumiBeam, but it's not NumiBeam really. Even the BNB beam, you know, you can reduce a lot with, you know, constraining. Correct?
I would say mostly correct. I think that the power of this channel comes from BNB beam. But the question is, if we just do a single BNB beam study, if we do 2D comparison, so there will be degeneracy. The new me help to break the degeneracy. Unlock the power from BNB. As mentioned, so here this sensitivity comes from the very large new me new ratio, but that is only true for BNB, not new me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe I want to talk to you more later. Okay.
Great, thank you. Right, ready. So the reception, I think, is the outside one west. So yes, please do now all head up to the atrium, and thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.